And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to learn more about my heroes of society. That's the men and women who give us all jobs. In fact, my guest today, Roger Hall, gave me a good quote earlier, Roger. You said 60% of all people work for small business owners.
That's correct. I think they're the economic engine of the American economy.
They really are. And so that's the point of this program, Entrepreneur Radio. We get to hear their stories and strategies, successes and failures. And out of that, it helps inspire us. I think it makes us real. So Roger, I had the privilege of just meeting Roger recently. He's the owner of an organization called Compass Consultation.
Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to. So Roger's business really is coaching entrepreneurs.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about your business and background.
So I got my PhD in psychology in 1991 from Ohio State and have spent the better part of my career doing executive coaching, leadership development, and organizational leadership consultation.
And at what point did you start this business, Compass Consultation?
I became self-employed in 1998, and now I tell everyone I'm ruined for employment. I don't think I could ever go back.
That is so true. Many entrepreneurs are unemployable.
Yes.
Roger and I have been talking in preparation for this about some of the things that he finds vital for an entrepreneur to have alignment on if you're going to be successful. And I think the challenge, Roger, that most business owners have is it's lonely at the top. Who holds them accountable?
Exactly. Most of the leaders I work with, I tell them you are the most lied to, least well-informed person in your organization. And they ask me, why is that? And I say, that's because you write the checks.
Everybody's paid to tell you what you want to hear,
correct,
not what you need to hear.
So my job is to tell leaders the truth as best as I see it.
In a way that they'll receive it.
Sometimes they just fire me, but yeah.
Right. And as an outcome, hopefully engineer some change. So
yes,
we are in a very similar practice because we both are change agents.
Yes.
So talk to us about the passion you have for seeing change. What drives you?
I've been a student of attitude change since I was an undergrad. And I think, you know, the thing that I'm really good at is popularizing other people's research. And I think I'm good at helping people change the way they think, helping change their attitudes. And so I've been a student of that since my college days and then my graduate school days. My goal is, how do I change as many lives beyond my reach and beyond my life? That's kind of my life goal, for the good. Change those lives for the good.
And the best way you can achieve that is by helping change how people think foundationally.
Yeah. As we look at the way the brain is made, we're starting to discover the most reliable way to change unproductive emotions, unpleasant emotions, and unproductive behavior is to become mentally disciplined, to work on the part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex, to limit and control the emotions and to limit and control the behavior.
And I think often thought life is overlooked. Most of us aren't aware of the patterns that we have and that we repeat every day that lead to the same dysfunctional outcome, yet we continue to do it. And the role of a coach is to help expose, walk us through what that relationship is like.
Yeah. So let me first touch on the stream of consciousness that runs through everyone's mind. We all have a stream of consciousness that runs constantly all day. Most of us have never stuck a ladle in to sample what's in our stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Part of my job is to slow leaders down enough that they pause and reflect and begin to be aware and monitor what's in their stream of consciousness. My one trick is I train leaders to monitor and manage their thinking. Excellent performance in any endeavor is first and foremost disciplined thinking. Yogi Berra said, 90% of baseball is mental, the other half is physical. He wasn't very good at math, but he was right. Great baseball players are first and foremost mentally disciplined, as are golfers, as are business leaders. And my job is to help those business leaders think better.
Yeah. And it's an overlooked segment of life, right? Who helps the business owner think better, slow down? Too often, life runs so fast, you're reacting instead of being strategic.
And the press, because of, or the press or pressure in our society is that we've got to move faster. We've got to accelerate. And we now have technology that moves us at ever-increasing rates. And so leaders are not slowing down because they think they have to be busy in order to be productive. And in fact, they're just being busy.
So you could say that being busy may actually help you be unproductive.
Oh, absolutely. When we concentrate on a problem, that's when we feel the best. When we're focusing on solving a challenging problem in our domain of expertise, we lose ourselves in that problem. That's where our best thinking comes from. There's a researcher, and he called it flow. Most of what we're doing every day now is answering 200 emails. We're chasing meeting after meeting, and we're never thinking deeply about anything. And the really, really great leaders slow down to speed up.
And so if I'm going to slow down to speed up, what are the areas I should be spending time thinking about or managing my thought process?
As I've examined the lives of really successful people, and when I use the word success, I don't mean just money. Money is one element of it, but they're successful in every area of their lives, and they monitor and manage these 10 areas. And so I call them the Big Ten. I'm an Ohio State grad, so everything has to circle
the
around.
The Ohio State.
So these 10 things are things that are all under their control. You'll note that I don't talk about someone's health life because people can be born with a disease or contract a disease outside of their control. They don't have control of that, but they do have control of, first is thought life. We spend a lot of time helping people monitor and manage their thinking. The second is spiritual life. The really great leaders that I've worked with have a cosmology. They have a philosophy of the world, and they have a belief in a higher power. Then we look at nutritional life. What's the fuel that they're putting in their system? Exercise life. How are they using their body? Then we have social life. These are your friends, the people that you hang around with. Love life. Those are members of your immediate family. Once we get to that, then we look at rest life. And I call that rest and sleep life. Most of the people that I meet are underslept and underrested. Mm. And I differentiate that from the next thing, which is also very important, which is recreational life. Mm. A lot of the leaders I work with don't really have very much fun. In fact, they've forgotten what is fun. So having fun is important, but I distinguish rest from recreation this way. If you've all been to Disney, no one considers that a restful vacation. It is a recreational vacation. A restful vacation is when you sit in a cabin in the mountains and you look at the woods for a day and you've got nothing to do, or you lay at the beach and you watch the waves come in and don't do anything. That's rest. And then the last two are money life. You know, if you look at the research on money, money can't buy you happiness, but it can sure help you avoid a lot of misery. Under a certain point, if you've got $0 or in debt, there's a lot of stress to that. And then up to a certain point, increases in the amount of money you have increases your level of life satisfaction to a point. And then at some point, it really levels off. And then the last one is work life. I'm a big believer that happy people are working. And the average length of time that people live after retirement without productive work is about 5 years.
Wow.
So the dream of retiring on a golf course, playing two rounds a day, and just looking at your investments, that's somebody's fantasy. But what I find is that active minds get really, really bored in about 6 months to a year.
Right.
So we talk about the importance of work and how it's related to happiness. And that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of work that's toil. There's a lot of toil,
right.
And that's kind of part of work. But when we're solving challenging problems in our domain of expertise, we're most happy.
I think that point on retirement is very germane to our culture today. I see that happen a lot. And if you don't have a goal for retirement, it's like that purpose is gone. And I can think through my life, and of your top 10, I have in seasons of my life put way too much focus on the wrong things. Like,
yes.
I can remember a time when I was working 90 hours a week and my focus was work.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was work and everything else took a back seat. So the leader who is able to balance these things, I would say that's maybe even seasonal, but also I would think unique. Talk to us about what does it take for someone to be able to be humble enough to say, okay, I need help.
I think the first part is that humility piece. I work with people who are teachable. They seek counsel and accept correction. And I've worked with people who seek counsel. And so they would come in and they would ask for my advice and I'd give it to them. And then they would tell me, yes, but that won't work because of this. Or, yeah, I've tried that and I'm not going to try that again. Da, da, da. So they love to have their ears tickled and be told something, but they don't ever want to do anything. The more important piece is, do they accept correction? When somebody says, boy, that's not a real smart move, they go home and they change. And that's really hard. So teachability is probably the first and foremost thing that I look for in a great leader.
I think part of being teachable is being self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there was some formula. I know in my business, I've got some folks who just are not self-aware, and it's hard to help someone develop that skill set. One suggestion you made a little bit earlier is slowing down.
Absolutely.
Listening.
I think that's the only way to get to self-awareness, is to slow down long enough so that you're aware of what thoughts are going on in your head, and listening to the input of your friends, your family, wise counselors that you've surrounded yourself with, so that you can become self-aware. We can distract ourselves with so many things and never really look at ourselves.
Boy. That's true. So now that we've taken time to slow down, you've given us the big 10. What are the three steps that I would take if I'm working on catalyzing change in a specific area?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that the keystone is being able to discipline your thinking. And I give a lot of the people I work with a thought monitoring exercise. It requires a pen, a pad of paper, and a timer on your phone. And even if you have a dumb phone, they usually have a timer on there. And so what I tell people to do is to set the alarm for every hour for 10 hours of the day for 7 days. And when the timer goes off, I tell the people I work with to write down the thought that was on the top of your head when the timer goes off. Now, if you're driving, you know, wait. But get out the pad and paper and write down the thought. And this isn't a journal. This isn't what I did over my summer vacation. If you were thinking, boy, I'd like a cheeseburger, I want you to write down, boy, I'd like a cheeseburger. Or if you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to be late, I want you to write down, oh my gosh, I'm going to be late. It's nothing more than that. But the important thing that happens is at the end, you have 70 samples of the content of your thinking. That's the thought monitoring piece. There are two important outcomes. Number one is that whenever people look at it, they almost always find a theme, a predominant pattern of thinking that comes up over and over again. Or like, I'm stressed, I'm hurried, I'm angry. Whatever it is, they see that over and over again. The second is it gives the person 70 practices at monitoring what's in their stream of consciousness. Once you do that, the next two steps are relatively easy, which is once you've found the predominant unproductive pattern of thinking, the head trash that you need to take out, the next time you see that thought come up, because you've already figured out how to do it 70 times, that's the thought stopping step. So it's thought monitoring, thought stopping. So when you have I can't be late. If I'm late, it'll be awful. Well, when you have that thought, then you think, okay, I need to stop that thought. That thought is not productive. It's not getting me what I want. And then the final step is thought replacement. And sometimes you need help with this thought replacement step, which is, how do I replace that thought with a more productive, accurate thought? Now, that last bit is important. I'm not telling people to believe in rainbows and unicorns. I'm telling them that they're telling themselves lies, and my job and their job is to tell themselves the truth. And the best lies are mostly true. And that's why it's sometimes helpful to have someone come in to observe what you're telling yourself. Because we don't tell ourselves whoppers of lies. We tell ourselves really subtle lies.
Yeah. And we create our own emotion out of the belief that we've had. And that lie becomes, I'm a worrier, right?
Uh-huh.
So I think it was Mark Twain said, I've had thousands of catastrophes in my life. Only a few of them
actually happened. Yeah.
Right?
It's a great quote.
It's a great quote. And we catastrophize our beliefs because I draw that very worst conclusion that it is a lie, but at the moment, it's my reality. So it's
correct.
Waking up out of that fear-induced adrenaline rush.
Yes, and it's probably more than we have time to talk about today, but our brain is designed to protect ourselves. And so it remembers scary things. It remembers life-threatening things, and it's really good at predicting disaster because that's what keeps us alive. So fear is very productive, but worry, which is anticipatory fear, is unproductive. Because fear, if I see a snake, I'm going to do one of three things. I'm going to kill it. That's fight. I'm going to run away from it. That's flight. Or I'm going to freeze. And fortunately for us, snakes get bored easily and they slither away. All of which are present tense. All of which are productive action. Worry is anticipatory fear. I wonder if I would do the right thing if I saw a snake. And there's no productive action. And so we tend to loop in worry with no productive action. And that's what makes worry so destructive. We're always going to have that. We're always going to have fear. That's productive. It's a matter of telling yourself the truth based on the worry, which is the anticipatory fear, because our brain will keep looping and rehearsing disaster because our brain doesn't want us to be dead.
Right.
And we're really wired to keep ourselves alive.
Awesome. My guest today is Roger Hall. Roger, give a plug for your book and tell the listeners how they might reach out and have a discussion with you if they're prompted to do so.
Well, thank you. I have a leadership book called Expedition. It's available on my website. The website is www.compassconsultation.com. You can learn more about me on the website. I have a YouTube channel, Dr. Roger Hall. If you'd like to reach out to me, there's a contact form on that website, and the email will actually come to me, and I will answer it.
Awesome. Awesome. Dr. Hall, thank you so much for being a guest today. It's been awesome having you on the show.
Grateful to be here.
On Entrepreneur Radio, we share the stories of leaders and individuals who drive change to see how they've achieved success. If you'd like the content of our show, you can visit us at crossroads.sandler.com, crossroads.sandler.com, or you can reach us directly by calling 208-429-9275.